You're on the podcast where we talk trash about the No, I lost it.
Oh my gosh.
I was trying to do it from memory. I had my wrong notes up. Okay, let me try again. This is PS You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
There we go.
That's what happens when you go on like a month hiatus. I just forget. I lose all credibility as a podcast host.
I know you were in Japan. Not that any would know based on your social media posting.
Maybe I'm saving it for Substack. You know, maybe I want to really dig in. Maybe I want to write my travel blog. You know, like maybe I'm launching Steps with Shelby or whatever.
Okay, interesting. Well,
I'm gonna quit my travel blogging. I'm gonna start writing about how to travel with a perfectly cool toddler, and we'll do one trip a year, and it'll be great.
I mean, mommy bloggers are a thing.
Yeah, of yesteryear, but
you could get into it. Travel. Well, yeah. Now you would just have to do a little bit of light swinging, and then yeah. You could also get on. Mom talk.
Yeah, that's true. Well, none of them are swingers. It's none of the swingers. Okay, they just happen to be associated with the circle. Okay,
somebody, there was one of them that's not a swinger. I thought one of them was.
One of them is the central character.
Okay,
of the swinging internet, but everyone else is non-juicy swingers.
Okay, well, lame.
Yeah, snooze, honestly.
Lame. Swingers only.
Exactly. It's just sad Mormon women pretending their lives are really cool with their lame-ass husbands dragging them down.
And one of the husbands is gay. Yes.
Yeah, probably. Statistically, very likely. But no. And also, I am sad we didn't get to talk about sinners because it was a delight. You were right. And I haven't stopped thinking about it. And I honestly have been listening to the soundtrack repeatedly. And I do want to tell everyone that they should take the 2 hours we're about to spend talking about this episode and go see Sinners instead.
Yeah, really. Yeah, no, Sinners is better than whatever we're about to deliver to you. I've seen it twice in theaters now, which is shocking for me because so rarely go and see movies again, like right after I saw it. But Sinners was so good that I had to see it a second time. And yes, I've also been listening to the soundtrack. It's so good. Everything about it is great. I really hope that it wins Best Picture. I mean, I guess we have a whole year's worth of movies to come out yet, but I think
it's
possible. I
wanted to ask you the one question mark I had in the whole movie.
Okay, yes.
Which I think was, it's an excellent film. And like, even if this is just like a weird error, I'm okay with it because everything around it was great.
Yes.
But okay, so in the final battle, let's say, when they open the doors and the vampires come rushing in, there's like a bunch of shots of people being destroyed and eaten and torn up. But it's none of the actual people who are alive. You know what I mean? Like, it's none of the actual people who had been in the bar, like, waiting to fight them off. Because all of those people end up having a final stand later. You know what I mean?
You know, so the first time I watched it, I didn't notice that. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, who are these people? Are the vampires fighting themselves? Were there other people? Is this like a Yellow Jackets type situation where there are just sort of random people who are lurking about because when they do that circle where it's like everybody has the garlic in their the garlic, that group, like you see all of those people be killed for the most part, and it's not in sort of that initial attack.
They have their moment after. Yeah. And so all those moments after work, but the big bloodbath doesn't make sense because
there's nobody else.
No other there. Body.
So I wasn't sure about that either. And I think that there must be, like, I don't think it's just an accident that it's there or that they were like, well, people probably won't notice. So I think that there must be some other sort of explanation for it. They do, like, find that guy who's sort of been passed out at one point. Yeah. And I did wonder if maybe there's just, like, a second group.
There's just a bathroom break. A little restroom.
Or, like, or is there a group of people who we somehow missed who are, like, in the other room or something that, for some reason, I don't know. And then I also did kind of wonder, like, is it possible that there were people who were outside who weren't attacked yet?
But then they were in.
Somewhere. Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, yes, I did.
Okay, well, if you ever get an interview, if you ever get to talk to Ryan Coogler, can you just ask him? I need to know. I feel like
did you look online? I'm like, somebody must have asked.
I feel like it's an accident. I feel like it's just like, oh, we want a bloodbath. Like, let's just do it. And we can just say they were fighting themselves. I don't know. I was wondering so if smart. I watched it again, if you'd be able to tell who's being attacked, you know, like, cause yeah, no, I could probably spend a lot of time analyzing it because I'm like, no, it wasn't the hot girl. It wasn't, you know, Delroy. It wasn't, it obviously wasn't him and all this. And then I'm like, well, then who was left? And maybe I'm just forgetting someone, but like,
I don't know. Okay, well, right
on a positive note, my favorite moment, well, wait, what? Okay, this is just Sinners at the Top. But having seen it twice, you know, obviously there's the one scene everyone loves and that truly deserves all the flowers. But what was your favorite part of the rewatch?
Oh, that's a good question, because obviously I was waiting for the musical scene, which was so incredible. I honestly think that the most impressive part on the rewatch to me was Delroy Lindo's performance, because I think that the first half of the movie, before you get to sort of the big stuff and they're just going around and meeting up with the various people, I think the scene at the train station where they're trying to convince him to play at the juke joint is just, he's just so good. And his line deliveries are so interesting. I also didn't notice the first time, like when he's describing the lynching, that they use this like audio from the lynching in the background, like really subtly. And I thought that that was really smart. And I didn't pick up on that the first go around. And then also on a more fun note, like all of the cornbread stuff is so funny. Like, it's just so incredible. Right. And it's just as good the second time when they're like, well, why can't you come in? And like, that's just, that sequence is fantastic.
No, it was a fun movie. Very disgusting, but fun. Okay. Okay, but speaking of disgusting, but fun. Okay, segue.
Segue.
We haven't done one of these in a while, I think, because we forgot your birthday. And they're big ones. They're big episodes. But on our birthdays, we try to do these sort of special PS You're Wrong Abouts for celebrities where we go through their sort of life, career, and talk about their movies and how they became who they are today. So really delivering the hard-hitting journalism we may be speech for lacking otherwise.
Yes.
And this year for my birthday, happy birthday to me, I got to force you to watch Gerard Butler's filmography. Gerard,
is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I saw that in my research. It's Gerard.
So, I'm just gonna pronounce it Gerard, because I'm like okay, sure, and he's not listening to this. No offense.
Well, he goes by Jerry, so you can also just try.
He goes by Jerry. That is the most insane thing. I will say, like, I have I guess we'll get into this more, but I do think that he is a fascinating sort of individual who ended up in this, in like being this weird sort of aging action star when I don't think that's necessarily what he wanted. And I think that's funny.
I mean, I agree. I think it's like mesmerizing to watch because so we're talking Gerard Butler, and yeah, he didn't get his first acting role until he was like 30. He was 26. And he infamously became the only Scottish law student lawyer to be fired a week before he was qualified to practice law. Because he was always just so drunk and disorderly, and you know, he was succeeding, like he was on the honor roll or whatever, but he was also just like having these wild summers, or even when he was working, just like getting blackout drunk and missing work and all of this. So he was fired and disgraced. And so he decided, you know what, I've always been curious about acting. I've always loved the idea of acting. He says when he was a kid, he would just like walk around town, like on his way home from school, like just imagining these scenarios of being like an actor and acting in a war movie or, you know, whatever. And so he finally went to London at the age of 25 and just tried to work out a way into theater. And he got cast in a play for Coriolanus, which he got, made the director cry with his audition. He's such a gifted actor.
Shakespearean actor, Shakespearean. No less.
And so after that, he got a few like small roles here and there in some British movies. And then at age 30, he finally moved to LA. And he just, hit the ground running. Taking on any job that would take him.
Yeah, basically. I mean, when you're 30, you sort of have to take those things on. I think it's interesting because, like, obviously he is a smart person. You know, it's like if you go to law school, that is, like, that's a very specific type of person. And I don't think that we normally, Kim Kardashian notwithstanding, think of actors as necessarily like the smartest people.
Right.
Yeah. I think especially when you're thinking of the sort of like Vin Diesel, Jason Momoa, like action star kind of person, you think, oh, this is Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone. Like you think of, oh, this is somebody who was sort of like hot and muscular, and had a certain level of charisma to them that then sort of launched their career as an action star. And every now and again, you'll get sort of an unlikely action star like Liam Neeson. But I think for the most part, you have these people who like early in their career are just kind of brawny. And then that segues into something that is much more like lucrative for them. Mm-hmm. And while that is kind of the case in what happened to Gerard Butler, it's like, it's not, he comes, I think, from a very different standpoint. And I think that then you see that in his career as we move forward through it. And that like, at first he was just kind of like trying to do whatever. And then he ended up like getting sort of stuck maybe to a certain degree.
I don't know. I mean, that's what's fascinating about him is because it's like, yeah, you look at his filmography and you're like, this man is not a good actor. It's like, he's just kind of flubbed his way through this. There's ebbs and flows that are mostly on the low end for his career. But then also he has these moments where it's like, oh no, you're good at this. But I think the main thing, if I were to, you know, theorize on what's holding him back, I think it's his accent. I think it's, he cannot figure out how to drop his Scottish accent. And so when it's like distracting in every role. So they either have to cast him to be Scottish or some sort of, I don't know, UK adjacent kind of European Viking man.
Yes.
Or you'll just spend the whole movie being like, is that his accent? Like Angel Has Fallen. I'm like, is that his best work? And I think that's how it holds him back. But I am curious, like, I feel like, you know, on the on a scale of actors, I feel like he's pretty, you know, good. Like, I feel like he's not going to win an Oscar, but I also feel like he's better than like a lot of bad actors, you know?
I think it really depends on what you
He's only been nominated for 2 Razzies, okay? Sandra Bullock's been nominated for more than that.
Which, that is shocking that he's only been nominated for 2 Razzies. Like, has he been nominated for any, like, actual awards, though? Is another great question. What would he have gotten closest to an award for? Like, like maybe like a Golden Globe kind of thing for like The Ugly Truth or something. I guess like Phantom of the Opera maybe.
No, I mean, I think 300 was a big film. A lot of people.
Right, but nobody is. I'm saying which of these movies was closest to getting him an Oscar nomination? It was not 300.
I think 300 was really well accepted at the time, wasn't it? It was like technically.
I'm not saying that it was a bad movie.
If you look at his list, I'm saying that's the closest. That's my guess. You're saying the closest is The Bounty Hunter? Like,
no, but I'm trying to think of like what is the like what is something on like does he have Maybe anything on his filmography? Opera? Yeah, that I think Phantom it's of Phantom Opera. Of the Opera is probably what's closest.
Also, but maybe wasn't Law Abiding Citizen or like Den of Thieves, like those were ones where people were like, oh.
I mean, yes, but they're such action movies. I guess I was like, like, has he been in anything that's like he was in a random indie movie that made no money or whatever? And it's like, no, he really, he has not done anything that's like that, which is interesting because you do feel like at this point in his career, he is famous enough that if he wanted to be in some sort of like low budget something as like an alcoholic dad who reconnects with his child, like he could get one of those roles, you know what I mean? But he is not. But okay, I guess before we sort of start with his career, one, why did you pick Gerard Butler? And like what is your what is your connection with him? What is your experience with him?
My experience is early. I grew up. Like, the first memory I have of Gerard Butler is probably Timeline, which is one of his first movies. And it's, I don't know why that was just, like, the type of movie my family gravitated towards, which is, it's a Michael Crichton novel about, what's it called? People digging for, not anthropologists, but you know what I mean?
Archaeologists,
yeah. Archaeologists who are digging through the site of like a 1400s French/English battle, and then they also get wrapped up in this time machine company who's lost one of their teammates back in time, and so they go back in time and they have to kind of rescue each other. And that was Gerard Butler's first like leading role, and it is a bad movie. But it's like charming. It has Paul Walker in it. And I don't know if you've seen it. I
did not. And I did not watch that as one of the films I watched to prepare for this.
But anyways, I also, so I don't know. He was in early rotation because then I also remember watching Phantom of the Opera, and he plays like the rock, gravelly voiced Phantom. Reign of Fire, though, is my true love.
And we will get to that.
It's stars Matthew McConaughey and Christian Bale, and then Gerard Butler's there too, having a good time doing his Star Wars, you know, parody. And it's great, and I love it. I loved it as a child. I think of it often. It is my Roman Empire. I can't get enough of it. And so Gerard Butler's always just had this soft spot in my heart as like, yeah, he's not great, but he's fun to watch. And I think he's had a few things over the last few years recent enough, like that I had been thinking of it. And the reason I chose him is I rewatched Greenland, which is sort of his more serious disaster flick. And he's good in it. And it's like a really stressful, well-crafted film that's a little different than what you expect from the trailer. Similar, I think, to not similar thematically, but a surprise in the same way as Plane was, which you and I saw. And then again, Den of Thieves, which everyone was like, oh, wow, that's not actually bad. And that's basically the best kind of praise you can get these days. And I just feel like it's time to give Gerard his flowers on the world's best, most important podcast. So here I am.
I will say that I really got lucky in that my dad's favorite genre of movie is action. Yeah. And so while I do like action movies and, you know, we'll go see them now and again now, I really have a strong base in sort of like a 2000 to 2015 or maybe even like through 2020, like action movies, because that's what he would watch. So we would go see them in theaters and then we would just like rewatch them at home. And when I say rewatch, I mean, we would not watch the whole movie. We would fast forward to the various action scenes.
Oh, no.
So like, I have seen the action scenes in 300, like probably like dozens and dozens and dozens of times. Have I ever seen the entirety of 300? I don't know, but I have seen like the various action scenes so many times. So like 300, Law Abiding Citizen was another big favorite. The Olympus Has Fallen, that series. Yeah. So there's a lot of those movies that are sort of just like permanently enmeshed in my brain. And then also my grandmother was obsessed with the Phantom of the Opera movie. And it's so interesting, some of these like cultural artifacts, because Phantom of the Opera movie comes out in 2004. Yeah. I am what, like 14 years old at that point. So, and I live in the middle of nowhere, Michigan. I'm not sure I had even heard of the Phantom of the Opera before the movie came out. So I really have no context for this. Yeah. My grandma loves it. And so I'm like, oh, this is a great movie. I watch it. I'm like, love this. Love the music. Wow, so good. It was not until I think I moved to, you know, it wasn't until like 2017 when I start hearing these rumblings of, wait, people didn't like the Phantom of the Opera.
It was this episode. People, I was like, wait, it got that on Rotten Tomatoes?
People thought that the Phantom of the Opera movie was bad. I was like, what? I thought like this was beloved movie. Like,
yeah, one
like,
of the greatest.
Yes. Like a classic. Movie. People are obsessed. Like, and it shows Gerard Butler's range that he was in this. Yeah. Like, what an icon. No, people did not like the Phantom of the Opera, but I did, and I stand by it. And if I'm listening to Phantom of the Opera, I'm listening to the movie soundtrack. I am not listening to the cast album, whatever.
Never.
No. I'm listening to Patrick Wilson and Emmy Rossum.
No, exactly. I'm glad you said that, because I felt dumb today. I was like, wait, nobody liked this. I could have sworn it was the most important film of the year. Like, I
right no I and really exactly to it me it was
accept. Yeah
yes mm-hmm. To me it was. I'll say this though, that the one genre of movie that I just like do not enjoy that much, and it's sad because it's your favorite genre of movie, is the like disaster. Oh, there's some sort of supernatural something going on. It's like, I either want my movie to be an action movie and have fight scenes, or to be like a sort of
space thriller.
Like a outer space thing, or something that's like just like normal people in a house depressed together. the sort of like, oh, there's this supernatural thing going on and it's a drama, but it's kind of an action movie. But like, I just, it's like never that interesting to me. And I feel like a lot of the time I'm just thinking like, this isn't realistic, or the characters, why are the characters doing
this? Because he's not actually in that many. Like, he's really not in a lot of disaster flicks, unless you count, I mean, the Olympus Has Fallen, I guess, could be skewed as a disaster flick. It's more action, but we'll call it disaster. But even then, it's really just Geostorm, Greenland, and Reign of Fire, right?
Yeah, I guess
a lot of his movies are like Den of Thieves, or rock and rolla, or, you know, like these
But even I guess like Plane and some, like, I'm thinking more of like Jason Statham movies, okay. And those I really love, where it's like, yeah. Oh, this is just Jason Statham doing like fight choreography with people in sort of increasingly outlandish situations. Like the plot is, oh, someone's trying to steal something or whatever, but you know, it's never, it's right. It's always sort of like in the real world to a certain mm-hmm. degree. And I do feel like Gerard Butler's are less about like him doing like fight choreography against like a army of baddies, and more about there's like more extenuating circumstances than like like I don't need the gimmick of we have to land the plane and take the plane off and whatever. I mean, I did like Plane, but it's like I'm more just like, oh, there's a crime syndicate and we gotta get in the base and there's people. Yes, and I did like Den of Thieves. I watched the first one. I did not get to the second one, but yeah, so I think there's some things on this list where I'm just kind of like, okay, like whatever, I don't need to watch that. But yeah, I think though that Gerard Butler does have like a level of depth to him that like pops up every now and again. Yeah. And I do think that it would be really interesting if he could get a role that's like sort of playing with type, but lets him do more. So where he is kind of like a grizzled old Scottish man, but like in a more interesting, like dramatic role than something that he's in.
Maybe like Pig.
Yeah, like that kind of thing, I think, would be sort of fascinating to watch.
Maybe he could do the live action Up. I could see him in 20 years playing.
Or even like in a Rocky kind of situation. Oh, okay. I feel like he would be good.
Like a war movie?
Or yeah, honestly, that, I could see that. Like if he was in 1917 or something. Like,
he has a face that has seen an iPhone. I mean, he did 300, but...
You think he has a face that has seen an iPhone?
I'm trying to picture him in 1917.
I feel like he's so, like...
It seems like there's a pocket of time.
I'm like, this man has had skin cancer 40 times. Like, I feel like he looks so weathered, and...
No, I know, but I'm saying I can't picture him playing... But you know, that's not fair. That's not
like,
fair.
I don't think I could see him as like in Downton Abbey, but you're telling me that like one of those like Saving Private Ryan he couldn't have been in. Like
you could do what's the Mel Gibson one everyone loves?
Hacksaw Ridge?
No, with the blue.
Braveheart?
Yeah, Braveheart. He could do Braveheart.
Yes. or honestly put him in one of those Clint Eastwood movies. Like I think he would be good in like a American Sniper, Million Dollar Baby kind of a vibe. Like,
I think he has a softness that he doesn't get to show a lot. Because I think, think about like P.S. I Love You, which I also remember from my childhood and I kind of hated because it's like the cool guy's dead. I don't care who she ends up with. Like, he's the best. And he plays that so well. And it's just he's so good at being that type of romantic. Whereas in his rest of his, you know, struggling rom-com history, he plays sort of the jackass, the dick, the bad guy. And I don't think that's really it. I think he wants to be a little teddy bear. And I think we should let him. And I think, he could play the grizzled, you know, lighthouse keeper. But maybe he could also play, I don't know, like something a little bit... softer.
He could get some of those like Mark Wahlberg-y kind of roles where it's like, oh, he's the dad to somebody or something. Like Instant Family, maybe. I don't know.
He's not a great parent in any of these movies. You know what I mean? Like he tried to do it with Chasing Mavericks and it was not good. And Nims Island or whatever, or I guess Greenland is good because he's separated from his kid for most of it and he's like trying to get back. But engaging with kids doesn't seem to be his strong suit, which makes sense.
It's fascinating, though, because it's like, I mean, he does have several franchises, but it's like, He's never been in a Fast and the Furious movie. He's never been in a Mission Impossible movie. He's never been in a Marvel movie. Like, yeah. He feels ripe to play somebody in some of these universes. And the fact that he hasn't is like, yeah. I'm kind of like, what are you doing? But I'm also sort of like, is he difficult to work with, do we think? Is there sort of a reputation going on where he doesn't want to work with other people, and so he's just in these movies where it's sort of like the Gerard Butler show, and there's not really a lot of other like competing big names. I feel like
I don't think he's a diva. If anything, he has that sort of Ewan McGregor element of like not being that invested. And that's something he talked about, is like he realized he had to like actually do the work on like knowing these characters or whatever nonsense actors need to say. But so like that started later in these roles, which I think you see more as you get into these later stuff, like the Den of Thieves and the Greenland and all of that. But I think he's just like, he has that like ADHD creative vibe where it's like his interest wanes and he'll show up and he'll do it and then he'll wait for the next thing. So it's like maybe he doesn't have that like drive or focus or the interest in perfecting his relationship with his agent to really like get things going. Like maybe he's just like chill, but he is kind of a mystery. Like he doesn't have a very loud public life. I think he's still sober. He went sober at like 30, and he's been like rumored to date some stars, but really nothing that has stuck. He's never had like a big publicized relationship. There's never been any like, who's Gerard dating now? He's single. He doesn't have kids. Like, so he is just kind of this like loner man. And I don't know.
I have seen him. I saw him in a Broadway show once, and he was there with a woman. Mm-hmm. And I also saw him on the street at one point, and he was walking with a woman. I don't know if it was the same woman, because it was just sort of like a random blonde. But like age appropriate, I would say, or maybe not age appropriate, but not like not age appropriate. You know, like if he's 40, she's like 35 kind of energy. I did not recognize them it either.
My gosh, I wish I had seen Gerard Butler. What a catch. What a spot.
And the thing that's interesting is like the show that I saw him in was The Iceman Cometh, which is like a 4-hour long play. Now, granted, Denzel Washington was in it, so it's like, okay, you know, maybe it was just the hot ticket to get. But I do think that combined with the fact that he, you know, was in multiple versions of Coriolanus.
Yes.
And then also sort of the Phantom of the Opera of it all, and the fact that he was a lawyer. Like, I'm like, there's a certain level of intelligence here that I don't think we're necessarily seeing on the screen. I do think he is just a fascinating figure. And I would love to like read a really good profile on him.
Which again, there aren't many. Because I was where's his profile? And it's like the last big cover profile he did that I could find was like for 300.
Yeah. Well, because it's he's like,
done like interviews, but nothing.
Because these movies that he's that he's in are like big movies, but they're not like the biggest movies, and they're all sort of like, they're not like the sexiest things, you know, like, like New York journalistic outlets are not like, you know, who we need to cover, Gerard Butler. Like, I do think that should he be in a movie that was at all prestigious, a lot of people would be covering him, and there'd be those like very interesting sort of like comebacky kind of stories. And I don't like looking at, he has a lot of upcoming projects, and I don't necessarily think any of them are that, aside from the fact that he's in this Julian Schnabel movie, but that's sort of a like ensemble role. So well, I don't know.
And he has How to Train Your Dragon live action coming up.
Yeah, but like that's not a...
Not that he'd get... I think it'll be interesting to see how, like, that's that's probably the most like popular film he's been in.
Yeah.
Like a big audience.
But that feels like something where it's like, oh, he'll do like a junket or whatever. And maybe talk show
for sure. Performances. Maybe Parade could do a
maybe cover Parade. Piece. Unfortunately, the thing with How to Train Your Dragon is that I believe it comes out while I'm on vacation.
Okay, fine.
And so it's a little tricky.
Yeah. Well, I do think, you know, not to be imperialist, but there is something to be said about acting and how it's favored in the UK versus actors here. And I think, yeah, to your point, he might not be a total nerd, like, I don't know, Benedict Cumberbatch, but it seems, and he didn't like study theater, but he clearly loved theater enough to not just be like, I want to be a movie star, but instead started at the theater level.
Right.
And so, and he's done a couple plays even since doing movies. And so I think there is maybe just this less concerned about like being the next Chris Evans and more just enjoying the work he does, which obviously maybe he is a jackass, maybe he is a dirtbag, maybe he does wish he was richer and more famous and hotter and like whatever. But what he's presented and kind of how he's glided through this career and what he's said in recent interviews where he's just enjoying who he works with and like all of that, it does seem sort of like maybe he's just, yeah, he's in his third act, his golden years. He's just...
His third act? He's like 55, Shelby.
I'm just saying, I'm trying to think of the right term. Like, he's like found his niche and there's layers to it. It's not just disaster, but there's like this like kind of, yeah, I don't know. Because I'd be curious if he ever does a rom-com again. I'd be curious if he ever tries a family comedy again. But it seems like I guess How to Train Your Dragon is right there. But yeah, I don't know. He's just interesting, probably because he's so removed from the spotlight. And yet there's something in his performances where you're like he's not bad. It's not like watching like Mark Wahlberg, for instance, struggle through a film, and he has charisma, and maybe it's not like as high as The Rock's, but he's also not as derpy as The Rock. And so you're sort of like, huh, anytime you see him in a movie, you're like, wait, what has he been doing? Why hasn't he been doing more? And it's kind of just this, he's just this sort of enigma in the Hollywood bro gang. And I just find it fascinating.
He's also a producer on all of his most recent movies. And I wonder if that is also part of it, of like, okay, if he wants to be sort of in charge of his projects and he wants to pick them, and then there's very specific types of projects that he can probably get greenlit and get money for. And it doesn't seem like he is that interested in taking roles in other things, or like more supporting roles, you know, because I think that where he would probably shine from a more like I don't know, like dramatic perspective would be like a really good supporting role in something, you know, like if he was in like as one of those random people in Licorice Pizza, or you know, like that kind of thing, I think. And that, and he's not going to be producer on that, and he's not going to be in charge of that. He's just going to have to come in and do whatever. So maybe that's part of it as well. But I do always appreciate your love of Gerard Butler. He's kind of like nothing to me mostly. Yeah. Like I, in the skew of action, or in the lineup of action stars, like, yeah, I would much rather take like a Jason Statham than a Gerard Butler, but to each their own, you know, to each their own.
Yeah. Well, I think his filmography paints an interesting picture. Okay. And I just, it's not just like, oh, he makes a good action flick. Like, I think what draws me back to him again and again is this sort of kernel of, I don't know what it is, depth or charisma, or sort of like a question mark of if he's good or not. I don't know. Like, it's like I'm mesmerized.
Well, glad that someone is mesmerized.
Okay. Well, admittedly, you haven't seen a lot, but I'm glad you did. You did your homework on.
I've seen a decent number of these.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen most of his major movies. I did not go back and watch like, and some of them like, okay, he's in the He's in the James Bond movie, Tomorrow Never Dies. I don't remember him in that. He plays leading seaman in 1997. This is one of his early films. And I did not go back and rewatch that. But I have, in fact, seen that movie.
Wow, amazing. But yeah, no. So it's 1997. He gets his first film role in a movie I've never seen called Mrs. Brown. But it's also called something else because it's from the UK and I don't know. Whatever.
Yes, starring Judi Dench.
Judi Dench, yeah. Judi Dench, Dame Judi Dench. And then Tomorrow Never Dies. And then, really, yeah, the 90s is a slow slog for him. But then in 2000...
But he is in an adaptation of The Cherry Orchard, the Chekhov play. So again, we've got...
Yeah. He loves this Chekhov.
Yeah. Chekhov. Got some interesting... things going on and some more dramatic roles.
Yeah. But then he moves to the US and his first role in the US is Dracula 2000, where he plays Dracula. And did you see this?
No.
Okay, so honestly, iconic. It's sort of your basic Dracula movie with Van Helsing, whatever. But the twist is Wes Craven? Yeah, twist is that Dracula is actually Judas Iscariot and that he's being punished for betraying Jesus. And so now as the undead Dracula, his goal in life is to just turn so many people into vampires so that they can be hedonistic and basically fuck God forever.
Okay. Interesting.
Iconic. And he was cast in this based on the director's the casting director had seen Coriolanus on stage. So it was sort of a long role coming, and he did it. He showed up and he played the hell out of Judas Iscariot. And it's a very dramatic film, very like stylized, and it wasn't good, and no one really liked it. But the reviews were like, oh, this guy. Kind of good.
It has a 19% on Rotten Tomatoes and also made no money at the box office.
Absolutely nothing. But the reason he got cast in...
I also love this. Dracula 2000. Known internationally as Dracula 2001. Like, clearly he was released the following year in other countries. And they were like, well, shit. Like, I guess we have to change the name.
Yeah. So it's a skip, but it's there. And then 2001, again, a few things I did not see nor heard of. Harrison's Flowers, Jewel of the Sahara, and Please.
But 2002. Well, two of those are short films, and Harrison's Flowers is a war romance starring Andy McDowell, and Gerard Butler is billed seventh, so probably not a large role for him.
He's setting up, he's building his, you know, roadmap, because 2002, he gets in it with Reign of Fire, okay? Now, Reign of Fire is just an excellent film. And I mean that sincerely, even though I'm laughing. But like, you have Matthew McConaughey against Christian Bale as sort of these, you know, war-torn, disaster-torn dragon survivalists, and Gerard Butler's there as like the best friend. I'm so interested to hear your thoughts. Please tell me how much you loved it.
This movie, like. I will say this in its favor. I really appreciate the like early 2000s where we hadn't quite figured out IP yet. Like, this is before sort of like the Marvel movies and stuff had really like kicked off. And but we did have CG. Like, we had figured that out to a certain degree. And so people were really just coming up with random shit to
having
be
fun.
Yes, yeah. Putting a movie together, like Reign of Fire, where it's like, oh, there's dragons, but the dragons are like causing the apocalypse and they're burning the world. And it's sort of like a Quiet Place energy, but like with these dragons that are trying to kill somebody. And it really like, but then there's only one male dragon and the rest are female dragons. Like, like the whole thing really makes zero sense if you think about it. And It's just such a bizarre premise. And like,
well, Matthew McConaughey is like a dragon hunter. Well, so when the dragons are released, they wreak havoc on the world, burning it down. And right, at some point,
is not a, like, we have all seen lots of movies, lots of TV shows. We've read stories that involve dragons. Mm-hmm. I have never seen one where it's like, oh, the dragons are actually the apocalypse and they're like here to burn the entire earth and that's what their goal is. Well,
it's because they eat ash. Okay, so, like, what do you want the dragons to do? They subsist on ash.
Right, but, like, this, it's a new take on dragons.
Yes.
And then we've got this, like, sort of steampunk underground living situation that they've got going on. Yeah. And then we have the thing where there's one male dragon, and if he dies, then all the dragons will die, which, again,
they don't die. They die. Well, okay,
they can't procreate, whatever. Yeah. But again, not a common dragon thing. You know what I mean? It's like we picked this very common, magical, mystical figure and then came up with a completely new set of rules for how they
operate.
Roll
the tape on the death of a unicorn because you were loving that was an original twist.
And I was gonna say that is what I really liked about this movie is that it is so weird, and I'm like, there's not a chance in hell this would ever get made today. Like, it was fun to watch because I felt like this clearly made it in some weird, like, very specific time frame with a very specific person. Like, this movie was only getting made then, and it was lucky that it got made then for the amount of money that it did, because this was, like, a fairly big budget movie for the time. And so I was like, this is just such, like, an interesting piece of history. Like, I would love to read an oral history on how this got greenlit, because it's such a weird movie. Although nobody has seen this movie in the past 20 years, so I don't think anybody would read that story.
Definitely should have done a 2020 recap of Reign of Fire, one of the greatest films ever to exist. But
for as much as I appreciate the sort of zest and bold swings that this movie is taking, I ultimately did think it was sort of bad. Like,
Matthew McConaughey as this, like, bald, crazy-eyed, bearded muscle man. It was iconic. I could quote this movie. I won't, but I could.
No, and the entire time I was like, this is such a Shelby movie. Yeah, like, this is the most Shelby movie that has ever existed. Like, I was like, she loves these random ass apocalyptic whatever movies. And I'm just like, I don't get the appeal of this, but sure.
No. Iconic. Okay. What do we do when we see them? Run fast, dig deep.
And they're like gardening.
Gardening. They have to survive. It's the apocalypse. He's just trying to keep his castle alive. Oh, I loved it so much. Honestly, Christian Bale's best work. And I am going to watch it.
Definitively not Christian Bale's best work. Like, honestly.
What about when Matthew McConaughey leaps off of the crane, axe first? Oh.
I did appreciate that. I was like, okay.
That's style.
Vibes.
That's good. Also, but does Christian Bale, does Gerard Butler die in that or no? Someone else gets cooked, right?
No, he dies in the movie. Does.
He gets cooked. Yes. Yeah. In the, stairwell.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Gerard. Oh, man. Well, it's iconic, loved it, and immediately following that, you have Lara Croft Tomb Raider, which is the Angelina Jolie movie, and the first Angelina Jolie movie I saw, and it's bad. It's definitely worse than Reign of Fire, no question.
I have not seen any of the Tomb Raider movies, so I didn't see this, I didn't see the Alicia Vikander one when they did the reboot, never played the video games, yeah, so did not see this.
Well, he does that. It's fine. You know, he's like a B role. And then Timeline, like I said, that was his first starring role. And honestly, so bonkers. But he goes back in time and through the course of one day falls in love with a French maiden he cannot talk to because he's English, and decides to stay back in 1402 with her or whatever.
Well, yes, as one should.
As one does. And then you realize, and then you realize that the site they've been excavating is his old castle, and the very statue they'd been admiring of him, of this man dying with his beloved, was her, was him and her after a long, long life together. So it all worked out. Very romantic.
Okay, well, that does seem sort of clever. Okay.
Yeah, a cute twist. Just a terrible ensemble, honestly, just really bad. But there is like a death in the, it's like a classic Michael Crichton story where it's like everything that can go wrong does go wrong. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of like side characters just die like in weird ways. And there's one where he just like falls and hits his head on like a clothing rack. And it honestly scarred me because I was like, wait, that's all it takes. That's how fragile we are. So really, really asks you to question your mortality, which I love for him. 2004.
Dear Andre, what a splendid party. The pair of you are bright new, yeah. What a night, what a burst. And what does one fans here to us? A toast for the city. What a pity that that's not them got me here. How many times have I listened to Masquerade? Quite a few.
I like the three part. And who is this? We have a guest.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, what do we owe this unparalleled delight? I honestly, so good. And he's just screaming through it. He doesn't sing. He's never attempted a musical since. He did like vocal acting for this. He was cast because someone saw Dracula 2000, if you can believe it. And they were like, this man has the drama. And who's the musical writer?
Andrew Lloyd Webber
always wanted to like rock Phantom, like, you know, instead of your classic Broadway vocals, he wanted a rock star. And so he brought that, you know, he brought his gravelly gravitas to this film. And everyone was talking about Emmy Rossum. But I was like, this Phantom's freaking cool, man. He's like growling through every single one of these songs, and he's not good, and yet he has the audacity to teach her. Like, I admired that, you know.
Interesting. I did like Phantom of the Opera. Phantom was not the one who I was intrigued by most, and I did want her to end up with what's his name, Raoul. So yeah. I was on the right side of history even
it
then.
It wasn't that I thought he was a good guy. I didn't want her to end up with the Phantom, but I thought he was the interesting one.
Okay. I'll say this. I watched the movie as a child and was like very bought into the, you know, romance of it all. And then I watched it, I think, in college maybe. And I was like, it's oh,
fucked up. Yeah.
This guy is a rapist. Yeah. He's like kidnapping her and bringing her down to the sex dungeon.
See, like, and wedding and dress she, like, he's been crossing. Yes,
and she's like, she wakes up, she's like been drugged, and she, it's like, what happened down here? I was like, and this is like actually skeezy. Right, no. And then I saw the musical on Broadway and I had the same exact thought, and I thought, this musical is lucky that the music is so good. Like, the music is so good that that you kind of like have to just be like, sure.
Yeah. It's melodrama. It's soap opera. It's not real. You know, it's like people should have questions about a ghost teaching a girl how to sing, but they don't, because that's just the world they live in. And we have to accept that.
I am intrigued by this next movie, though, that came out in 2004, Dear Frankie, which stars him and Emily Mortimer. And this has like a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did.
Is this good?
I mean, yeah, it's good. It's like it's like one of those, another classic 2000s twist where it's like about a dad. I think it's, okay, let me pull up the exact. Okay. So it's about a deaf kid, and then his mom moved to a town, and there they meet Wait a second. I don't know.
Did you watch this?
I did.
When?
In 2004.
Okay. I was like,
and now I'm trying to remember.
Okay. Well,
it's like a found family style movie, I think. Oh yeah, because he's like writing letters to his dad. Focuses on a single mother
whose love for her son prompts her to perpetuate a deception designed to protect him from the truth about his father.
It's like that storyline in New Girl where Schmidt writes letters to Michael Keaton, and I'm pretty sure that's what happens here.
I didn't watch New Girl.
Oh well, that's too bad. But the son is writing letters to his dad. And then she decides she needs to give him a real dad, like, experience. So then she hires Gerard to, like, play the dad or something.
Okay.
So it's like one of those, like, and someone gets sick. Like, there's cancer or something. Like, it's one of those, like, very schmaltzy, like, 2000s films about a child orphan. You know what I mean? Like, it just has that vibe. But I remember him being like charming in it because he plays sort of this guy who doesn't want to do what he ends up doing, but then he falls in love with the kid, you know? He's like, aw. And thus everyone's hearts grows 3 sizes with this Tiny Tim situation.
Then we have a soccer movie called The Days of Their Lives. I did not watch this. I've never heard of this movie.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Then
we have 2005's Beowulf and Grendel, which I watched in college when Beowulf. when we covered Beowulf famously.
Yeah.
As one does in college. This, I think, is kind of boring as a movie in general.
No one likes it.
I think especially when you compare it to the Angelina Jolie version of Beowulf. Who's the bad guy in that? Or who's the main actor in that movie?
I don't remember. I just remember that trailer and that single line reading by Angelina Jolie. And I would quote it.
Where it's like sort of animated, but sort of not.
Yeah.
Ray Winstone. No idea. Okay. Well.
But then he was in Wrath of Gods, which is the
documentary about the making of.
Wait. What?
He's in Wrath of Gods is a documentary about the making of Beowulf and Grendel.
Oh, really?
What did you think it was?
What's the one about the Egypt? Oh, maybe that's the Gods of Egypt, actually. Yeah, that makes sense. That checks out. Okay.
Oh my gosh. And you say you love.
Sorry. Yeah, him. No.
But no, okay. In 2006, this is really his big moment because this is when 300 comes out. And 300 is such a sensation of a movie. I mean, this is where we get it sort of, I think, launches his career in a real way. This also launches Lena Headey's career. Like, she's going to go on to be in Game of Thrones, but this is like her first big time. We also, this is very early on, Rodrigo Santoro playing Xerxes in this. It's probably
why our generation thinks about the Roman Empire so often.
Perhaps. Fun fact, though, is that there is actually a earlier version of this movie, of the 300 Spartans, that was a Huff family staple long before this movie came out, 300. So I had seen the old version of it, you know, from like the 60s or whatever, like dozens of times before this came out. So this was a highly anticipated movie in our house, like separate of the, like, nobody knew who Zack Snyder or any of these people were. We were just, like, mostly excited because my dad loved this concept of, like, oh, here's these 300 Spartans, and they're all going to die, but they have to sort of, like, sacrifice themselves, and they're such, like, warriors, and they're going to kill all of these other people. And he was just, like, really got riled up.
Did it live up to
that.
It? Did it live up to the old?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I think they're very different, but it's the same mentality. And this one has better action scenes, you know, when the guy kicks the messenger in the hole. There's just a lot of scenes that my dad was really into.
I didn't see this one until I was married. because it was R-rated.
Oh, I saw the action scenes of this when in 2006. So, like, how old was I? I mean, I guess it was, like, in high school then.
Well, it was because Mormons weren't allowed to watch it. So, well, I just never saw it. Which I think I missed out on the moment, you know, because watching it in 2017, I was like, this is kind of weird because it's like kind of animated, kind of like.
Well, it's so stylized. And I think that that was really a really big part of it then was like, oh, we'd never seen this kind of before.
But he does have a lot of abs. He has very prominent abs. And that's very probably launched a million diets with this movie alone, too. On a lot of covers for this movie. Obviously. But yeah, no, everyone was like, oh, wow, Gerard Butler is the next big thing. This is his big break. This is his moment. Wow, wow, wow. Movie star in the making. And then unfortunately, that was just the predecessor to like a pretty low time, few years.
But you have to think that some of these movies that are coming next, like he had already been attached to. Yeah. He's in some thriller called Butterfly on the Wheel. I have no idea what that is.
It's with like Pierce a direct Brosnan. To TV. Yeah.
Then we have P.S. I Love You with Hilary Swank, another actress who never quite, although she has two Oscars.
You're right. She's a little further down the line than him. So she can lord that over him in the P.S. I Love You too.
And then he's the dad in Nim's Island. Is that right? Because I saw that when that came out way back when in 2008. Yeah. That's like a kid's movie. I think it's based on a book, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have never heard of Rock and Rolla.
Yeah.
A Guy Ritchie like a movie.
It's just like it's a British like mob movie. So it's another UK movie and it's like just your classic, mob movie. Lots of brooding dudes shooting each other over bars.
But I think that 2009 is sort of an interesting year in tests. And I think that this is probably the year like where these are the movies that are coming out that are like the direct response to 300 in a lot of ways. Because this is 3 years later and there's four of them that he was in. He has like a voice role in Watchmen, so whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's in The Ugly Truth, which is the rom-com with Katherine Heigl, like terrible. An R-rated rom-com, I believe, is how it was sort of billed. And then he's in Gamer, the like sci-fi sort of action movie, and then also Law Abiding Citizen, which is more just straight action.
Did you ever see Gamer?
I saw all three of these movies.
Oh my gosh, you are such a Gerard stan.
Well, and it's like the thing with all of them, it's like The Ugly Truth and Gamer I saw in theaters. The Ugly Truth I think I saw in college at some point, but I don't remember either of those very well. Law Abiding Citizen was sort of the family's follow-up to 300 of like, okay, we loved 300, we loved Gerard Butler. He wasn't really giving us any action scenes that we needed in between. And then Law Abiding Citizen came out. And again, my dad was absolutely obsessed with this. There's something about the sort of like vigilante, like, oh, I gotta get revenge for my family thing that my dad is always. My dad's two obsessions in life are like, one, getting revenge for somebody like killing his family, which it's like, okay, like none of us have been killed. And also if we did get killed, like I don't necessarily think I need revenge, but like, sure, whatever is gonna float your boat. And then also the sort of like dying for a cause thing, which is what 300 is bringing. Like he really just wants some like righteous vengeance.
Yeah.
And so some of these Gerard Butler movies really like, you know, hit that spot that he wanted to really like rile up his masculinity.
Gamer was like basically Free Guy but make it violent, and it's
right
like The Matrix but worse. And then I didn't see Law Abiding Citizen, but again because it was R-rated, but I heard good things. That was his first co-produced title.
Law Abiding Citizen I don't think is a good movie. I like really sort of hated it, because basically his it's like his character is okay, let me read the description. The film takes place in Philadelphia, telling the story of a man driven to seek justice while targeting not only his family's killer, but also those who have supported a corrupt criminal justice system, intending to assassinate anyone supporting the system. So he is in jail, and he's figuring out ways to kill all of these people who were connected to this court case, mm-hmm. in sort of like increasingly sadistic ways. And so he's going after the attorneys, the judge, all of these different people. And I think Jamie Foxx plays like a lawyer who Gerard Butler is targeting, but who is good. Like, mm-hmm. he's the prosecutor. And it's just like, it's very violent. And I was always kind of like, Gerard Butler is like seeking revenge and is sort of just like this terrible person in this movie. And he's killing all of these, like, you know, sort of innocent individuals. And it just like did not sit well with me. Mm. I was not getting riled up for this one as my dad was. However, I think one interesting thing about Law Abiding Citizen is that this is the first movie that I ever saw Viola Davis in, because oh. she plays like the mayor or somebody in this movie. And I was like, oh, who's that? And then of course, like a couple of years later, The Help comes out and I'm like, oh, the woman from Law Abiding Citizen. she's now in The Help. Like, I'm sure two roles that she's like, I want nobody to ever speak to me about.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, well, now we're at 2010. He's trying yet another rom-com with yeah. The Bounty Hunter with Jennifer yeah. Aniston. I did see this in theaters. I remember hating it and thinking it was bad. So bad.
It's bad. It's not good. That's true.
But he does voice the dad in How to Train Your Dragon, which
yeah.
the live-action version is coming out next month.
His most well-reviewed movie ever to exist, so.
I mean, How to Train Your Dragon is a very good movie, I think. And all three of them are great. And it very, like, correctly utilizes his very distinct voice.
Yeah.
So I think that they smartly got him to play the dad in that.
Do you think he'll be able to do justice in the live-action version?
I sort of think so, because I kind of don't know what all he needs to do necessarily. And I think he's the correct age for everything. So, and it's not that big of a part. Yeah,
not really that, but more like, I'm curious, because it seems like the How to Train Your Dragons animated, you know, they're fun. They're kind of goofy. And the dragons yeah. are all cutesy. Whereas the trailer looks so serious and dark and brooding that I'm sort of like, will it lose some of that fun to just be this like...
Oh, well, dragon almost movie? Certainly, like all of the live-action remakes have done.
I
know,
so then it's like, I would want Gerard's character to have, like, the fun punchiness still, and I'm just curious to see if he'll just have to be this depressed, grizzled dad.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And then, yeah, 2011 is, like, a lost year for me. I do not know any of these movies he's in. Oh, he's in Coriolanus.
Coriolanus, yeah. Well, he's in a bunch of like short. He's like the narrator of a dolphin documentary. Yeah. I saw Coriolanus in college because there was one annoying person on my. Maybe I told this story on the podcast before. I was trying to get into this fraternity, and obviously, I don't have a lot of things in common with straight guys, and. So, you know, they would talk about sports. I would have no idea what was going on, whatever. But there were a couple of them who would go and see movies every week. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. Like, this is sort of my in. And the reason why I wanted to be in the fraternity in the first place is because the way that the housing worked at my college, you could, like the people in the fraternities got sort of first pick. So it was mm-hmm. like, okay, you wanted to be in a fraternity, so you got a good room. And I liked the group of people, you know, enough, yeah, but like, yeah. you know, that was sort of part of it. But so these group of guys like would go into the movie theater that was in the town next door, like once a week on Tuesday or whatever the cheap day was to watch movies. And one of them was like the best movie I've ever seen. My favorite movie is Coriolanus. It's so good. And at the time I was rushing, I thought, oh, okay, like I gotta watch this movie and I'm an English major, it's a Shakespeare adaptation, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I learned later, after knowing him for like more time, that he had the worst taste in movies of anyone I have ever met. Like, almost to a movie, if he liked it, it was bad. If he hated it, it was good. And so had I known that, I would have never watched Coriolanus. But because I thought, oh, here's someone who likes movies who's saying that this is one of his favorites, like, I need to check this out. No, it's a bad movie. And also Coriolanus is just like a bad Shakespeare play. It's basically the Iliad, but in a more boring version. It's just, it's so dull. Or no, it's not the Iliad. It's, anyways, yeah. It's, but it's bad.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Well, yeah. But a cute moment for him. A circling back.
Also, random, the character that Viola Davis plays in The Hunger Games is named after the evil woman in Coriolanus. So everything comes back to Viola Davis. We're trying to make connections. Well,
Coriolanus, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Volumnia.
I see what you mean, yeah.
Coriolanus. Okay, no. Machine Gun Preacher, also in 2011. I have no idea what that is.
Did not see it. But this was sort of a regroup, because then in 2012 he's in Chasing Mavericks, which is the Disney sort of surfing movie. He's a surfing coach, I guess.
Never heard of it.
Well, it's good. People like him in it. It's good. It's sad. I mean, it was pretty scary. He and his crew, like three other people, were filming and they were dragged out to sea and they had to be rescued, and he was hospitalized after being held underwater for like an hour or something crazy. So yeah, anything for the craft. And then he did Playing for Keeps, which is the last rom-com he's done, and probably because this is his worst reviewed movie ever made. It's like he's a soccer coach, and like all the moms are into soccer because he's so hot. Not good. Not good at all. Bless his heart. And then 2013, he launches Olympus Has Fallen.
Yes. And this is where we really sort of get into franchisee.
Yeah.
Gerard Butler, I would say. Olympus Has Fallen is that's another movie that we as a family watched. I watched Olympus Has Fallen and also White House Down, both, yeah, you know, odd that they came out around the same time. I always get them mixed up as to who's in who, which one.
Yeah.
And I could not tell you the plot of this one versus that one, or in which pieces go in which, but both of them are basically like if the White House.
If it's fun, it's from White House Down. If it's serious and kind of glum, it's from Olympus Has Fallen.
But yeah, he's in this one, and Morgan Freeman is the president. Yeah. Yeah, and he's like
Aaron Eckhart is the villain. Well, the twisted, I think he ends up being the bad guy, if I remember.
Yeah, yes, I think so. But he's like, he's like Gerard Butler's like an ex-security or an ex-secret service person. Is that right?
I think he's about to quit.
Or he is just, there's something going on where he's like kind of a secret service person, but not.
He causes it a car crash, and so he's reassigned.
Okay. But then for whatever reason, like, today is the day that he's in the White House and has to save everybody.
Yeah.
Then we get, the next year, we get How to Train Your Dragon 2. We get the second 300 movie, 300 Rise of an Empire, which he is not really in. He just has a small role, and that movie is not good. That's a movie about boats. There's a lot of boats in 300 Rise of an Empire. Because famously, his character dies at the end of 300, as all of the main characters do. So they really had to come up with some mysterious ways to bring it back. 2016, here is where Gods of Egypt comes out.
There it is.
I did not see this. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did, of course. That's a cross-section of interest for me, but it was not good. It's like basically all these actors play different, you know, gods of Egypt. So he plays Set.
Yes.
And it's not well reviewed, not well accepted. It's bad. It's very bad. But then to counteract that, he has Lyndon Has Fallen, which is also not great. But this is the year where he was nominated twice for two Razzies for both Gods of Egypt and Lyndon Has Fallen. So he didn't
the only
win, though.
Year he was nominated for a Razzie was this year, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Someone was worse than him. I don't remember who got the Razzie that year, but it was not Gerard Butler. He has not won a Razzie. So, yeah. More proof that he's not the worst, nor is he maybe the best.
And that year we also have A Family Man, which is a drama about a corporate recruiter in Chicago that he stars in. I've never heard of this movie.
No.
It also made $1.6 million.
Yeah.
And has a 16% on Rotten Tomatoes. So
yeah, it's
perhaps
tough.
That is why he's not making drama films.
I know. It's tough. I mean, and then we get Geostorm, which I swear you saw, but I guess not. But
I did not see this movie.
It's so in the future, they've found ways to control the weather through satellites. Sure. And then they all go awry and the satellites start wreaking havoc and causing these huge storms. And at first I'm like, heck yeah, sign me up. I want to see these disasters. But it's actually like there's not that many disasters. And the disasters that there are pretty lame. And then it's like he's able to thwart the last big disaster. So it's sort of like, okay, thanks for nothing. Like, you gave me a bad story and I don't even get good visuals for it. So it was not well received and very, very performed very badly at the box office. And yeah, just bad everything, bad visual effects, bad story, bad acting to all involved.
I also do think that this is a point in his career coming into 2018 where it feels like there's a shift, I think. Up until this point, he has done action movies, obviously, but it seems like he's done a lot of other things kind of in between, and the action movies that he has done feel like bigger budget kind of stuff, where I think we kind of pivot into a space where there's some budget things, but where it's more like like we're getting close to straight to DVD kind of energy with some of these movies that are coming up in his filmography. So I think the fact that Geostorm,
I think this next era is some of his stronger films. These are some of his better performing films.
Okay,
I mean,
we'll get
you
into
have Den of Thieves.
Den of Thieves, yes, which I do think is
like, oh,
is
wow,
good.
This is good. And that went really well. I don't know about The Vanishing.
The Vanishing, I have never heard of before. A psychological thriller.
A Lighthouse Crew.
Yes, looks bad. Distributed by Lionsgate. I'm like, this looks like something that went straight to DVD or to streaming service. Somehow it does have an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is interesting.
It has generally favorable reviews. So suck on that. Okay.
Okay.
I think
whatever.
This was burdened by, again, the Gerard fatigue from his real sour spot, which was the last 4 years before this. But this is where he's amping up. He's finding his groove, okay? Because you have...
No, because then we have Hunter Killer, which again is a movie that you like, but it's a movie that like does not exist to the world.
No, I haven't heard. I don't know Hunter Killer. I'll admit that.
Wait, what was the movie that you saw? Remember there was a movie that had a title that was like this that you were like...
Oh, Cop Shop?
No, that maybe it wasn't a Gerard Butler movie that came out since we've done the podcast and you were like very into... I swear it was this one. It no, but it had a name that was like Murder Fighter. Fighter. We talked about this on the podcast.
You.
I know. I thought it was Hunter Killer, but.
No, I don't There's so many movies that I've been like, no, this is good, and you've hated, that I can't even begin to start to think about what
Hunter, Hunter, Craven the Hunter.
No.
It was like, I want to say it was about like Nazis. Like there was like Nazis. What? Do you know, like someone was like Nazi bunker.
What? No.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, Nazi, I do not.
Bunker. Hunter.
Captive
movie. State. No. My gosh.
Nazis.
I swear that there was a movie that you watched that had a name that was like Hunter Killer, but was about like a bunker of Nazis or set in World War II. Nazis. World War II Hunter movie. But it had a stupid ass name like this, where it was like Killer Viper or Killer.
I'll look through my Letterboxd, okay? I won't give up on this, but I do not know what you're talking about.
Okay, look through your Letterboxd. It's been since we've done the podcast. Yeah, I'll look and it. It's something that I want to say is two words that is, this was like a couple of years ago, probably. While you're talking about that, I will say that the actual movie Hunter Killer that Gerard Butler was in, that apparently Shelby has not seen, stars Gary Oldman and is about a retired submarine. Okay, interesting. Then we're getting like remnants of things here where we get the third How to Train Your Dragon movie. This is 2019. We get Angel Has Fallen, which is the third movie in the Olympus Has Fallen trilogy. We're sort of like out of ideas at that point. And I think Angel is the like referral, like this code name for the president played by Morgan Freeman, and someone's trying to assassinate him. So it's kind of like White House Has Fallen, but not really. Then we get the 2020 Shelby's favorite Greenland, which lives rent free in her mind. But I feel like,
no, everyone was like, okay, here's the problem with it.
Define everyone.
People were like, oh, okay, Gerard Butler makes bad movies, so Greenland is going to be one of those bad, like, disaster flicks. But then actually Greenland was less concerned with the actual disaster and was more about, like, humanity in a crisis. So it's like a very people-centric, anxiety-inducing film. So the reviewers and the audience, smart enough to give it a try, were all like, oh, this is good. And it's not just me. It also has a sequel coming. So, like, please give me a break. And it also performed very well for, you know, being a COVID movie. So, yeah, it is good. And I wish you had watched it, because I think it's a really strong piece for Gerard Butler himself too. So yeah, I think it's good and I liked it, and it didn't like have the same issue of like dumb kids or whatever that a lot of these how will we survive the apocalypse stories tend to. So it was good. I'm curious to see what they do with the sequel, but yeah, and this becomes one of his like go-to guys. Like, the director did Angel Has Fallen. He's also does Kandahar and is doing the sequel. So it's one of his most like revisited partnerships with this director.
Okay. Well, sure.
Yeah.
Then we have Cop Shop.
Yes.
Which again feels like another one of these straight to DVD movies to me.
And I think you would like it. This is one I watched for this episode, so I'd never heard of it, didn't watch it. But it's basically like this small town police station, and this guy gets himself arrested. Like, he's on the run, he's been shot, and he gets himself arrested, and you realize he's trying to stay safe from these people who are trying to kill him. And one of those people also gets himself arrested, aka Gerard Butler. And so Gerard Butler is an assassin sent to kill this guy, but since they're both locked up, they're kind of trying to figure out how to get the police to accidentally give them access to each other so that he can kill him. Simultaneously, another assassin comes into the cop shop and is also trying to kill this man. So then there's this one cop who's sort of left to be like, who do I release to help me fight off this other assassin while also knowing that this cannot end well for me? So it's kind of like gimmicky, but it's really just punchy. It's like, you know, an hour and a half. It moves
is
fast.
Hunter Killer. You have seen this movie, Shelby. You logged it on your Letterboxd.
Hunter Killer?
In 2018.
Oh my gosh, we have to do an episode on this? I doubt it. Roll the tape, honestly.
Do you remember seeing this movie?
No, I don't.
You logged it in 2018.
I believe that. I watched a lot of movies, okay? Okay, let's see.
Trying to gaslight me into thinking that this was,
but you're trying to pretend that I was saying this is the best movie ever made when clearly it's not. And you were probably just trying to make me watch freaking some foreign film about.
No, this was after the movie came out, because I remember we were joking because it was like, because you were saying like, what a stupid name, Hunter Killer, like it's like the same word twice, kind of. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to watch this. And then after you watched it, you were like, oh, it was actually good, like blah, 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 blah.
Okay, of course, I believe you.
But now you don't even remember seeing this movie. You're like, oh, no, I didn't see that. Like, yes, you did.
I'm reading the plot right now, and it's bringing no memories for me. So I'm sorry. I'm like reading the plot, and I'm like, I do not have any recollection of this. There's a Russian submarine. I do not have any memory of it. I'm not saying I didn't at the time say, actually, that was good. I'm just saying I do not remember it.
Shelby, that's concerning that you watched a whole movie in 2018 and you have no recollection of even seeing
it. How many movies have I watched since 2018?
Shelby, that's 7 years ago. Oh my gosh, you know you're bad at math. I think we got to get you checked in someplace.
You're right, it is 7 years ago.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well.
You need to destroy the naval base headquarters with their own missiles. With the war avoided, Glass docks the Arkansas at the Russian naval base to return.
You know really it's bad when Gerard Butler's biggest fan doesn't even remember Hunter Killer, really his hit know. Movie from 2018.
Hunter Killer.
Hunter Killer.
Okay. So I watched it in theaters?
Or did I watch it? I think that you watched it in theaters.
Okay, I'll listen to some of our episodes, see if I can find out what I said
about this. Well, you know what the thing is that I bet it was on our... I bet it was on our year-end list. Now that we're pulling things up, let me pull up our list, our rankings, because I think that would have been the first year that we did the rankings, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe there's something.
I'm like looking at this poster. There. I really have no connection. I'm sorry.
This would have been
I don't 20. Know why you're so like, mad at me.
Hunter. Okay, well, you did rank it number 71. See? So apparently okay, you didn't like
thank
it that
you.
Much.
I think you're making it up about me being like, oh my gosh, you have to see this.
Okay, but you did see it. Okay, but you did talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, in the first 5 minutes of a show where we talk about 700 movies.
Right here in between Den of Thieves and Alpha. In your list.
Between, as in next to each other, or as in there's
Den of Thieves, you ranked as 70, and then Hunter Killer is 71, and you want to know what's lurking right down here at 74? Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
That checks out. That checks out for a movie. I
wow.
forgot. You're trying to gaslight me saying, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe this movie, Hunter Killer. And meanwhile,
she
was ranting about
Hunter
it.
Killer.
Ranting about it on ranking number 70 of what? 75?
Yeah, but you famously said you loved your top 71 movies that year. So I don't want to hear it. Okay, moving on. Last
you
Seen Alive.
You with me that you remembered that so well. You're like, Hunter Killer.
Because I just remember, I remember you saying that it was a stupid name for a movie.
I probably said all of that in the same episode. I was probably like, wow, this movie's dumb and it has a dumb name. And you're over here misremembering me as some sort of lover of bad cinema.
Maybe it was this. Maybe it was that you were excited to see it and then were disappointed by it.
Yeah, that's
there was
possible.
Some sort of positive element in the Hunter Killer situation. I know there was. Now I need to think about the other movie though that had the Nazi bunker, because I think I'm getting that mixed up or something.
I don't think that's anything.
Nazi bunker. There's like Nazis and maybe they're zombies. Did I make that up? Nazi zombie bunker.
Like Inglourious Bastards.
No. No, I wouldn't be thinking about that. No, this was more recent. I want to say Nicholas Holt might have been in it.
Warm Bodies featuring
Nicholas Holt zombie Nazi movie. What was it? Look, my memory is better than yours.
I mean, different for sure. Just a different priority list. Anyways.
Yes, continue on.
Pop Shop, you'd probably like. And then Plane, we saw, enjoyed. I'm still waiting for the sequel Boat to come out. I'm looking forward to that. And then Kandahar, I did not see. Did you see?
No.
Yeah, no, sorry. I'm sure it's lovely. But then we get to 2025 and Den of Thieves 2 comes out, Pantera.
Yeah, I also didn't see this.
I watched this on the plane, actually, to Japan. And it is very different than Den of Thieves in that the tone shifts completely. I mean, not completely, but basically he has to let go of this robbery that was so successful where they robbed the treasury, and he can't let go. And so he finds out that the guy is doing another job at this like diamond facility.
this jewel facility.
And so he goes down and he's saying, you know what, I'm sick of this like thankless job. It destroyed my marriage, destroyed my life. Like, I want to get in on this. And so they sort of become allies, and they work together on this job. And then it's sort of this, is he pretending? Is this undercover situation? If he is undercover, he's having a lot of fun, like, and he's getting closer to this guy. And so, like, you know, sort of this, it was good. It was surprisingly fun and different in that you still get the, you know, tension of if a job's going to work. But then also Gerard Butler gets to kind of flex a little bit of emotional intelligence, because he's like broken and mad at everyone, but then he's also like, oh, I actually have found this family in these thieves, and so what does that say about me, and like is this job really worth it, and all of that. So it ends on sort of a, you know, setup for a potential other sequel, but it was fun. It was good.
Yeah, and that's the most recent movie he has. Obviously, mm-hmm. How to Train Your Dragon is coming out shortly. There's also a Greenland sequel coming out later this year. And then a movie, Jamie Foxx directed sports comedy kind of thing with Jeremy Piven, Robert Downey Jr., Eva Longoria, Benicio del Toro. This looks interesting. So yeah, well, lots coming.
See, it was a renaissance for him. These last few years have been, you know,
the last few years have not been a renaissance. But sure,
it's picked up from the ugly truth, you know.
It's picked up for you and the types of movies that you like.
Who are respecting Gerard Butler? Okay. Listen, I'm saying he's found his groove.
True nadir for his career was Hunter Killer, a film that Shelby watched not that long ago and has no recollection of watching.
7 years is a long time. This podcast, we've done, 300, 400 episodes? Who knows at this point?
And I think that I could tell you if I had seen a movie or not that came out in the year of our Lord 2018.
I'm sure, probably, but I'm sure I'll watch the trailer and I'll remember it, but nothing at all was ringing a bell. And I'll remind you that it was ranked second to worst movie I saw that year.
No, it was not second to worst. It was just low. You had seen like 80 movies.
Okay. So, bottom 10. Yeah.
Because Crimes of Grindelwald was like 5 slots lower. So,
oh, I see.
Okay. Well, this has been fun. I have to go to the bathroom. So I'm like, we actually got to wrap this up. Do you have any final thoughts on Gerard Butler other than I want to see him do something serious, or maybe not even serious, but I want to see him do something interesting.
Well, you're just not giving him a chance.
What's more I am giving him a chance.
Okay, what's more interesting? Okay.
I would like to see him in August Osage County. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I want to see him in.
Okay.
I want to see him in Bridesmaids. I want to see him in a comedy. I want to see him in a dramedy. I want to see him in something that's a little bit more interesting.
Okay.
That's not as an action movie.
Okay. Okay. I'll let him know. I'll send him a tweet.
Okay. Perfect. Yes.
Write that up.
Yes. You as his one fan can keep him in a loop.
So wait, after all this, what remains your favorite Gerard Butler movie?
Oh gosh.
We'll close it out.
I think I'm gonna have to go with Against All Odds, Phantom of the Opera. I'm like, I think that's actually a really good movie, and there's nothing else on this list that I'm really like, yeah. I mean, I guess maybe I would say How to Train Your Dragon is a better movie than Phantom of the Opera, but I feel like as far as, like, you know, that's just a voice performance. Like, favorite movie that he is actually in.
Right.
I think it is The Phantom of the Opera.
I respect that. You lovely little nerd.
What's your favorite?
Oh, it's Reign of Fire.
Greenland?
Reign of Fire. Okay.
Reign of Fire decidedly not my favorite. I don't know if it would even make top 5, but...
No, it's iconic, and I think if anyone's listening, they should watch Reign of Fire and Phantom of the Opera to get a full
spread. And Hunter Killer.
And Hunter Killer.
A very memorable movie.
Film ever made.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. We will be back next week, I believe. We're here a couple of weeks, and then I'm going to be gone. But yes, we have a little bit of an on again before we're back off again. And remember, our 100th episode or 300th episode, sorry, is coming. So send in mailbag questions. I know we've been asking for this for literal months now, but at some point we will get there.
Yeah. Let's see if you can find another movie I don't remember watching.
It doesn't seem that hard. Just look back at a couple of old episodes and I'm sure you can piece it together. Shelby, do you remember seeing Black Panther?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that movie? Do you know what Barbie is? Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye.